Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see below the surface.
Yes, indeed. And this week, it is episode number 73, and we're going to talk about Unholy Night by Seth Graham Smith.
Yeah, I forgot how violent this book was when I picked it out.
It's a little bit violent, but...
Just a touch.
Yeah, wait, we've
My Catholic
read
Women's
zombie
Book
movies.
Club is going to tell me all about that next week, I'm pretty sure.
It's funny, last week we saw Lincoln, and this is the same author who wrote Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Yes.
But, you know, I looked into the author a little bit, and I found out that he's the one who started this whole thing with Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Mm-hmm.
So did you read that one?
I did not.
I did not either, but it's in the bookstore. I had to pick it up and look at it at least.
Oh, okay.
And that's a lot different from this one in that I think all of the text of Pride and Prejudice is actually in that book.
And that was the first one where people were like, it is out of copyright. You can do that to it. Whoa.
Yeah.
And Abraham Lincoln, I believe he took Lincoln's journal or diary. Mm-hmm. And did the same thing.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that.
The twists into it that made him into a vampire hunter. And then this one is the first book he wrote himself.
Okay.
On his own. And I saw when I was looking, when I originally read it, and I was reading reviews on Amazon, a lot of people were saying, who'd read all his stuff, said they thought by far this was his best. Mm. Because he did the whole thing. He wasn't having to try to match someone else's style or...
Yeah,
change the original story.
And I can see how that would get old. I can't imagine reading very many of that type of a style. Yeah.
That's,
and this book, I thought it was really fun.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I think it would make an absolutely terrific movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully somebody's on it.
But they would have to stay respectful to the story, which is what he did and which is what impressed me so much.
Yeah. Didn't you say you picked it up originally to see how horrible it would be or something like that?
To disprove it. Yeah.
Okay.
I picked it up because I thought this book is so by a prominent author, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it just looks like the chance to get it all wrong in the service of his story. And I was so pleased and surprised to find that he kept true to the story. And I only caught this time going through listening. I only caught a couple spots where I was like, oh yeah, that's, I guess you could say Ishmael was, Sarah's son, but which it sounded like it at one point, not really, but okay.
Hmm.
You know, a few little things like that. But I was really surprised because scripture was used throughout and it seemed fairly much in the context in which we would do such a thing. He, you know, there was never really a question other than a normal people's question of, really? So you told Joseph, God is the baby's father. Nice move. You know, and everybody's like, no, shut up. He is God's baby kind of thing.
Right,
and
right.
So I was really pleased because they just kept going every so often. Someone would go, there's something about that baby. But
yeah,
it was a real baby.
Right, right.
Other than being quieter or, you know, whatever, than a normal baby, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Every now and then you know that something's going on there. You know, not only from what the characters say, but there's like an action.
Right.
In which the baby might be completely calm all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And, Yeah, I liked it. I liked that very much.
Yeah, good.
So, yeah, so it opens with the Antioch ghost running away. I remember you asked me last week, you said, have you started reading it yet? You know, and I said, yeah, I'm the Antioch ghost is running away from somebody. And you laughed and said, that's pretty much the whole book right there.
Yes. Yeah. I also liked the fact that he used Ibex as kind of linking chain of changing scenery sometimes.
Right, right.
It always start off with the ibex was pulling at this old plant, and it saw this cloud going across the desert, registered it as not a threat. Didn't remember 1,000 people had gone by an hour ago, because that's what an ibex would do. I mean, you know, wouldn't think of it. And
that is funny.
I think the other thing I liked about this book is he very imaginatively took a real event, which is the Holy Family going to Egypt, and looked at what could have possibly happened to them. Because you never stop and think about the fact that you've got this newborn baby, this woman who's just had a newborn baby. It can't be easy. And the, you know, the husband and father who are pretty inexperienced with that sort of a really long trek, as far as we know, Joseph. And he gave them realistic personality. He explored how would they feel being in this situation of this is a baby and our son, but also God. And it's that thing that I put this in my review at SFF Audio, that he was able to do that thing that Jewish people call a midrash, I think is how you say it, where they would take something and look for the truths that are inherent in the text of the Torah, say. But what they would do is they would write a story or a book about it, or tell their own fable or parable about it that kind of brings out stuff that the text doesn't itself say.
Yeah, and that isn't that a prayer tradition as well? I think it's a Jesuit. Is it specifically Jesuit where you sort of try to place yourself in a gospel story and try to experience it that way?
Yeah. I was going to say Ignatius, too, and I went, wait, founder of Ignatius, never mind.
But, so I guess a quick synopsis of the book is that it's really about the three wise men. It's a retelling of the three wise men meeting Mary and Joseph and Jesus, right? So, I mean, that's how I would summarize it in just a sentence.
And then the flight to Egypt.
Yeah, and then their flight to Egypt, right. So, after I read this book, or actually during it, you know, when they first walked in, okay, first of all, Balthazar is a thief. The Antioch ghost is a guy named Balthazar who is a thief. And he was running away because he had stolen some things. And these are who the three wise men are, actually, are escaped thieves. And they walk into this stable or manger, and there's Joseph and Mary. And that was a really affecting moment for me. Because when they walked in there, I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, they're really, you know, it's not like the Monty Python movie Life of Brian, where we can see Joseph and Mary a couple of times in the movie, but they're not like characters, you know, they're just in the next manger or whatever.
Yeah, they're playing around the edges.
Exactly. But they were right there. And they were real people. And it made me consider something at a deeper level, you know, whether the author meant me to or not, I certainly did, is, you know, Joseph and Mary were real people with real concerns and a real baby. And it made me think of that whole story differently. Not saying that this guy has done it correctly and this is how Mary was and this is how Joseph was, but it made me consider, and I will consider moving forward, what were they like? You know, what would it be like to have a conversation with Mary, you know, when she was really young and with child, and later in her life, you know, that was kind of a moment for me, because made me think about it.
Well, I also really liked that, because I mean, it does talk about it. He will go back and forth, especially at the beginning. It's mostly told from Balthasar's point of view, which that's the other amusing thing, is Balthasar, Gaspar, and Melchior are traditionally the names that basically legend has given to the wise men. Nobody knows. The Bible doesn't say. But so he uses those for the thieves' names, which I thought was, I was like, oh, clever. But at the beginning, where Balthazar is running away, he's also cutting away to Mary and Joseph. who are heading across to Bethlehem for the census, and it's giving you Joseph's point of view. You know, Mary's going into labor. Here was the place he could find for her, and he's like, he wanted to go in and help her, and she's going, this is wrong. It's taking too long. Something's wrong. This shouldn't be this hard. Is this right? This can't, you know, because she's young.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I can't go in because of our ritual cleanliness. And so he's shouting encouragement to her through the door. And I'm like, this sounds so horrible. And you're like, well, it accurately got you into that mindset
mm-hmm.
of how they could have felt, desperate and everything. Because we look at them over the gap of time. And that makes it, as you're saying, it makes it easy to not think of them as people.
Yeah.
It kind of makes me think of these two books, which I'd like to read by Ian Mortimer, called A Time Traveler's Guide to Medieval Europe. And now he's done A Time Traveler's Guide to Elizabethan England.
Oh, wow.
Or medieval England, maybe. Anyway, but yeah, basically, I downloaded the sample on the Kindle of the medieval one. And he's like, okay, so you're walking across the meadow, and then here's the town. Ooh. And here is everybody with this creek. There's a reason they call it Shipbrook, you know. And then you get into the town, and it's like this. And here's what you smell and hear and see. And to me, this book did a lot of that.
Wow.
Because yeah. as the book goes forward, of course, for the story, he is putting Herod into it a lot. Herod is like, oh, what if that baby got away? I heard a report it did on the trail. You don't think about that.
Yeah.
And what do they have to do to escape? What are the rigors of the desert going to do to everybody as they're trying to get away? What are the personal motivations of anybody else who's helping them? Because that's, I thought, fairly skillfully done. Balthazar has a whole backstory that you gradually learn, and you find out that there's a big reason that he's like, nope, nobody's killing these kids today here in Bethlehem. It's not happening.
Right. And, yeah, this shall not stand type of a
yeah.
thing.
Right. And he's like, I'll tell you one thing. They're not getting this baby.
Yeah, and it was neat. And I really liked the moment, too, when Joseph was explaining to Balthazar who this baby is.
Mm-hmm.
And Balthazar just laughs at him. He's like, are you kidding me?
Right.
She's with child, and this is what she tells you.
What kind of a sap are you?
Yeah, I mean, it reiterates, you know, that had to be a big difficulty for Joseph. And, you know, when he made the decision that, you know, he was staying with her, and I'm sure there was a lot of people that were, you know, his mom maybe, who knows, you know, like, you yeah. know, what are you doing? Yeah,
well,
really interesting.
I've often thought of Mary talking to Joseph about it because nothing indicates that she really told him what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And because Mary did a lot of pondering in her heart, and which to me always meant that she was pretty quiet about the whole thing, or a lot of stuff in their lives. And Joseph, I know, because the Bible does say, you know, Joseph was like, what the heck? And finally was like, well, I'll divorce her quietly.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. then the angel comes to him in a dream.
Right.
So
and then then that's when his choice is made. You know, he says yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And but various people along the way are like, you don't really believe that, right? You know, they run into this woman, Selah, later, who is personally taking it to Mary in that way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. So it's kind of interesting because while he's telling the story, which is super fun. It's definitely an adventure story, and I really am glad we had some zombies because it's been too long.
Yeah, and that is, this book is just a lot of fun. You know, we're talking about this as, you know, as if it's a real serious thing, but the whole thing is just funny. I mean, there are all kinds of moments in there that make you laugh, and then there's all kinds of moments where you're like, oh, oh no.
I know.
You know, and Herod was just nasty. Oh my goodness. Oh, yeah.
He was the worst. But you know, he was the worst.
Yep.
And historical documents bear that out. He killed his own wife and family from one of his wives because he felt threatened by them.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And that's why when at one point people are going, well, he wouldn't kill a whole village full of babies, would he? That just that nobody does that. And then somebody's like, wait a minute, he killed his own children. Of course he would do that. What does he care?
Yeah.
And that's just the least of what he does, because he is so, yeah, man, he's just so messed up.
Yeah.
But the thing I liked about it is he did all that awful stuff. He was horrible. I mean, that's what we do know. And what this book did for me was with the violence and Herod and everything, it kind of took me back into that world where I was like, this is more what life was like then. It was much riskier. It was much less certain. And survival was not guaranteed. You know, now in this country, you can go get food from a food shelter or a food bank.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
You can't, then, if you didn't have food, you would just die.
Right. If you have a dollar, you can get a double cheeseburger at McDonald's, right?
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I know. I mean, I know exactly what you're saying. And it is amazing. You know, my daughter had an injury recently where she broke her leg, right?
Oh,
and
you just
wonder, you know, if this was 200 years ago, I mean, what did they do? You know, this was a specific thing where they had to screw her a little piece of bone back to her leg, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if they would just, what do you do?
Bandaged up, hope for no gangrene, and she limps for the rest of her life.
Exactly right. Yeah. And, you know, if people with worse injuries, that's it for them.
Well, and we've been thinking about that lately because a coworker of ours, his father had the worst situation ever come up. And it's one of those things where with modern medicine, they can do this operation and then they can talk about radiation and chemo and they can do all this stuff. And you feel for the poor family because the doctors are continually giving the best possible scenario, which, okay, but everybody on the outside looked at it and went, oh. It's how many months do you spend this out for while the poor guy kind of suffers under the medical treatment? Tom and I would say, what would have happened in the old days?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he would have been able to move less and less and less, and eventually he would have died. They wouldn't have said, oh, you could maybe live for 2 more years or.
Yeah.
And then get everybody's hopes up and then gradually downgrade it.
Mm-hmm.
Or Tom, who had to have 3 back surgeries, and we used to go, well, without that, he would have had a withered leg and been selling pencils on the street corner or something because he couldn't have worked.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and then just finding water.
Yeah.
A clean source of water. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, boy, we take a lot for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really interested in those time traveler books you mentioned. I wrote those down. That sounds like it would be really interesting.
Yeah. And I've seen them before, but I always just had so many books to read. But I lately went through my to-read list and just crossed off everything ruthlessly that I was like, oh, this is a maybe interested. No, what's the definitely interested?
I do that sometimes, too.
Yeah, just cleaning it out.
Yeah. You know, I remember one time. Well, several times in this 2 years of podcasting that we've done, you've talked about, you know, images and things. I wonder if, you know, do we have pretty clear images, you know, from the movies we've seen of this time period, do you think?
Oh, wait, don't you think?
I'm just wondering, accurate. Yeah, accurate.
I think something like The Passion of the Christ was probably an attempt to get more accurate.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing that with a big group of us from our church all went and rented all these tickets and went to see it. And then we had dinner together at the church.
Mm-hmm.
And the people whose table we were sitting at were like, whoa, he really exaggerated that. That was just unnecessary violence. And I was like, no, I've read about this. Mm-hmm. That's accurate. Wow. It was awful. Yeah. And they did it all the time to a lot of people. And they're like, well, I just don't believe that. And I'm like, well, here's 3 history books you can read. But, yeah, most movies, I think, are more like either Life of Brian, where they're kind of joshing at it. Or they're, you know, I think of 1960s-style movies where we're looking at the nice side, the more romantic side of it.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's clean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and one other threat, you know, you mentioned, I mean, you allude to right there is – that we don't have, thank God, right now in the United States, you know, is the chance of being crucified like that. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, or just picked up off the street because somebody doesn't like you or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that there's persecution of various kinds, but I'm just saying that it's not anything like it could be. I guess yeah. it depends on who you yeah. are, doesn't it? I mean, yeah. I'm just imagining people arguing with me right now, but.
Well, but it's not even like, I mean, now when something bad happens, like, what was that awful thing in Jasper, Texas? I can't remember how long ago it was, but where there was actual violence and somebody was killed. It was a racial crime. That is such a rarity that it stands out.
Yeah.
So things still happen because you can't protect everyone. But in general, it's the kind of persecution that people tend to get outraged by now is stuff like what pops into my mind are the two gay guys who were really good friends with the florist, and then they were going to get married, and they asked the florist to do their flowers, and she was like, whoa, well, you know, I really don't agree with gay marriage, and so I don't want to do it, and so they sued her.
Yeah, yeah.
For intolerance. And just like, if that's the worst we all have to worry about, good.
Yeah. Yeah, things are definitely different.
Yeah, and it doesn't, and it's like you're saying, it's not that there aren't real kinds of persecution or like people aren't picked on the job or whatever, but it's not crucifixion, real right. crucifixion.
Yeah, and it, I mean, even as, you know, the whole United States moved west and things, I mean, to go out there by yourself, you know, you and your family, and then, you know, you're in charge of your own protection. You know, yeah. that's foreign land to me, you know. I mean, I've read books and things, but
yeah.
But it's like that, you know, even in these cities, you know, Jerusalem back at this time. Rough place to live, just rough.
What was the city that they went to? Hebron, mm-hmm. I guess they is how it's pronounced, where, you know, the Romans just waded in at one point. We're like, oh, there they are. We're going to get those people and that baby.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just mowing down everybody in their path. And so those are the moments of violence where you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah,
where he really brings it home to you because, you know, Mary's watching in horror as this little family's cut down near them kind of thing. But that stuff happened all the time. And I have a book called, where is it? The Global War on Christians by John Allen. Mm-hmm. It's a review book I got. And
I like John Allen a lot.
Oh, mm-hmm. yes. He is so even-handed and fair. He's very trustworthy, and I like his stuff a lot. And he, at this book, I got it because I thought, if I ignore this book, I'm ignoring the people he's writing about, which is pretty much everybody else, but other Christians anyway. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I haven't been able to really make myself read it right now because it is about actual persecution in a lot of the world against Christians because they're Christians, not because they happen to fall into that group.
Mm-hmm.
So we're so lucky here. You know, we complain about being picked on, but it's the most polite kind of being picked on.
Right.
It doesn't
right.
mean that we don't need to stand up for stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about a war on Christmas, you know.
So rough place, you know, and he got it, you know, it seems to me anyway that he really nailed some of that stuff. At the same time, being lighthearted, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, what do you call it? A dramedy, I guess.
Well,
it's a
no,
comedy just, and a drama at the same
it's
time.
It's like an adventure thriller. It's I'm trying to think of a comparable type of a movie that this would be.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if they are going to make it a movie. I mean, they ought to, but I wonder mm-hmm. if they're worried about, you know, people screaming and yelling about it like they did Life of Brian. They actually banned that in places, didn't they?
I don't know if they must have.
I'm pretty sure that they did. Yeah,
I know. And I was living in Kansas City then, and I remember that they said people were picketing because my parents went to see it and they loved it. And mm-hmm. they said, yeah, they had to cross the picket line. And I was like, why would people do that? And they said, oh, because they felt it was disrespectful to God. And I was like, so what does the picketing do? I don't get it. And I still ask that a lot, you know, mm-hmm. doesn't that, the Da Vinci Code, didn't people picket it?
Oh, yeah.
And all that does really is draw attention to stuff. Whereas if you just read about something, and I mean, I'm talking about the movie, but there was also the book, which everybody was outraged by or loved, depending. And I did have to be able to defend the parts that were wrong, because Tom actually had relatives who would quote it as if it were a factual book.
Yeah, I think that that's the thing with the Da Vinci Code. And I read that book too. But I think that the problem there was that the author, it depended on who he was talking to. He would act like it's factual information, and then he would say, well, it's fiction. You know, so I think that that's where everybody got all excited, was there was this blurry line that was made more blurry by Dan Brown. You know, he was trying to make it blurry. And so, yeah, he had points to make in that book. I mean, that's what he wrote it for. But yeah, it was hard to get excited about.
And I think the thing about this book is if he was making points, they weren't points like that.
Yeah, and I don't know that he was making points. I admit to being kind of surprised by it, too. I have no idea what his background is. I think that he's Jewish, actually, because on the Wikipedia page, it says that his real name is Seth Jared Greenberg. So I'm gonna say he's Jewish.
Of course, that can be largely held as a cultural thing, depending on how the person was raised and everything. But
absolutely, absolutely right.
But yeah,
there were moments, like we said, you know, when, you know, with the baby, you know, there were moments there, and talking about angels and I mean, there were several moments in the book where, you know, something that was going on was alluded to, and God actually even had a direct part to play in one piece of the book where he made it possible for everybody to escape, you know, and that without, I mean, did he say that outright? I mean, or am I reading that? How about the locusts that showed up when they were all trapped and it was, they were doomed. And,
off
the desert. It's like, here you go.
I was going to look up locust behavior, because that did not seem to me typical. Also the fact that they were picking people out, but
exactly.
I was like, do locusts really do that? I mean, I understand a big locust swarm. I get that. But, And I thought that was kind of interesting, where after that, Herod goes, oh, the Jewish God took sides.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I'm like.
And right before that moment was when Balthazar realized that this was true. Remember? And then he was told to go. He was in there, and then after all the locusts started showing up and destroyed everything, he could feel in his bones that he was being told to go.
Yeah.
And all that kind of coincided with this moment of revelation where he said, holy cow, this is really true.
Yeah. And, there is something about that baby.
There is something going on here. it was good. Well done, I thought. Yeah,
because the Balthazar is handy. Well, or should I say well done? Well drawn, maybe. Because he is the person who's been so disillusioned by everything in his life that he believed in, that he is now only in it for himself. He's got a hollow core in a sense of, well, he's very cynical, as are a lot of us. And so anytime anything comes up that could be miraculous, he's like, yeah, well, but there's also this explanation and that explanation. And the thing that's interesting is a lot of these situations that they're in and they get out of could be, you know, if enough coincidences happened, that's how it could work, because that's where God is, essentially, in the coincidence, basically.
Right, right.
And so it's up to the very end of the book, really, before he really fully embraces the whole thing.
Yeah. And that's a nice, believable arc for that guy, too. Yeah, very well done.
Did you listen to the audio, or did you read it?
Part and part. Yeah, so, you know, I listened when I wasn't able to read, and then I read.
Well, I had
very quick read. You know, when I was reading you were just flying through it.
Well, it's only an 8-hour book audio, so it's short. I think it's 8. But the thing I had forgotten is, I mean, for one thing, the narrator is just fantastic.
Yeah, I agree.
It's really good. But...
Yep.
is the part where they're talking about what happens to the little 4-year-old brother.
Uh-huh.
That part, I don't know if you listened to it. I did. And I was crying by the end again.
Oh,
because
wow.
It's mm-hmm. just heartbreaking. And the mm-hmm. way the guy reads it is just very affecting without being sentimental.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what's there is it's that thoughtless betrayal of another person who you love because you were so focused on your own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Balthazar in the end really can't forgive. You know, he's hunting down the person who killed his baby brother, but he can't forgive himself. And that is what he's got to come to terms with through the whole thing. Helping Mary and Joseph takes him on the path he needs for personal redemption or for personal reconciliation with God, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it's not like he has this come to Jesus moment, so to speak, but he does have to admit there's something beyond what he can see. He does have to admit that those dreams probably weren't dreams. And by the end of the book, he's become a different person because he stopped shutting himself off. And that was the other thing that surprised me is that the author got that part so right, because that's what we do. We start blaming ourselves, or we can blame other people for things that go wrong, but essentially we're unhappy with something to do with ourselves, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Amateur psychiatry going on right here, everybody. But that's why it's so important as a Catholic, you know, to have that sacrament of confession.
Yeah.
Because you have to examine, okay, I can blame other people, but what have I done? Let's let that go. Where am I putting up barriers between me and God and what I could be versus what I am?
Yeah.
Between being a bigger person, a better person, and being small.
Yeah, that's into scripture too, isn't it? You know, worry mm-hmm. about your own eye. Don't worry about anybody else's, you know.
Right.
Because that's where the problem is.
And he even puts in Gaspar and Melchior.
Yeah, that's right.
Their potential their potential is less because they're not as smart and good and everything as Balthazar, but they have the same choices to make and they choose differently.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a difference.
Yeah, and that was well done. I enjoyed that whole thing too. So Balthazar escapes from prison with these two guys and now you owe me.
Yeah.
So yeah, they don't They didn't know, have any idea what they were in for. And but anyway, I like that so much. I mean, that's part of what I think would make a terrific movie is these three guys. Be some funny, funny stuff.
Yeah, it's just the filmmaker would have to be careful to make the book and not what he wanted to say.
Exactly.
Because the thing that's kind of interesting is the author really does affirm all that stuff.
And he does, yeah.
You know,
and Balthazar is a very interesting character, you know.
Well, yeah, and you... You know, this is just one more example of you can make a book that is not really taking sides one way or the other. He's just telling the story faithfully, essentially. But with all these other embellishments that make it a fascinating story and make it a good story, and it's not hitting you over the head with a Christian hammer or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're left to draw your own conclusions at the end. But it's just a great adventure story, too. And so, I don't know, so many people are so clumsy with books and movies.
Mm-hmm.
This was a pleasure because you could give it to anybody and they could enjoy it.
Yeah, that's neat. I imagine you were pretty pleased after you read it the first time. I imagine you were surprised.
Yes, yes I was, because I was really reading it, looking out for, okay,
mm-hmm.
wait, oh, right, really? The Holy Family and zombies, fine, prove it to me. Where are you going to go wrong? Because I'm going to point it out. And yeah, I was very excited about this book after I got done with it. It was so good.
Yeah, and so I thought so too. Very fun. That's just the word I have for it. It was fun. I really, really was entertained by it. You know, not unlike Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which is a whole different thing. Although I never read that. I watched that movie.
No, I just watched it. I think the movie might have been the best way to get that story.
Yeah, especially if it was, as you described, you know, his actual journals and things.
Mm-hmm.
I'd want to read his actual journals first.
Yeah.
And but, I wouldn't know what's real and what's not.
And I just don't care enough to read his journals, so zombies or vampires aren't going to do it for me, I guess.
So the movie it is, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised also that Pride and Prejudice and Zombies has not been made. I mean, how could that not be a movie with all these zombie things going on? Seems like that would be a big hit if it was done right.
It seems to me like the movie studios, though, would go, where's our audience?
Yeah.
The zombies lose the girls. That's who likes costume movies. And the costumes lose the guys.
Yeah.
Seems like.
I guess you're probably right, but I don't know. I think that that may not be. Oh, look at this.
Made for TV movie. You know, really.
I'm just looking at it. It says that Pride and Prejudice and Zombie was optioned by Lionsgate Entertainment with Natalie Portman producing. Huh. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
And it says that, so it looks like it's just in development. In 2013, a new group of producers, including Portman, hired Burr Steers to direct and Lily Collins to star. This is in Wikipedia. So It looks like maybe it's actually going to happen. I don't know.
Well, what is the date on that?
Let me look it up in IMDb. Pride and Prejudice.
Well, while you're looking that up, The other thing I was going to say is that I'd forgotten, and when you're listening, it just kind of hits you, bam, 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 is the way he ends the story.
Oh, yeah.
He ties up all the loose strings, but he does it in such a way that you're like, oh, Gaspar and Melchior, oh, dumb again, go off to steal the same chalice they got caught with. Oops. They got crucified, and I didn't even see that coming, where he's like, and who did they wind up next to? You know, and you're like, oh my gosh, really? And so that, you know, that, and again, it doesn't carry out perfectly what the gospel says about those two thieves, but you don't really care because the point is made.
Right, right.
You know, it's that's the faithful telling of the meaning underneath everything.
Yeah, and it even says in there that they were forgiven.
Yeah, they realized who they were hanging next to was that baby they'd helped, and they begged for forgiveness, and they were forgiven. And then when the thing about Rome burning, and that was the thing that Sila and Balthazar had always both said, we're going to see Rome burn.
Yeah, yeah.
And their life together, and all these various things. And it was really nicely done. And then when he ends it up with the ibex, I'm like, oh, perfect bookend, you know?
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
That was fun. Yeah. So, Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies is in development. That's all it says.
Okay.
No dates or anything like that. So it's on somebody's desk somewhere.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Just sitting there waiting for money or something.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So.
Well, I don't know if there's a lot else to talk about in that book, except that I think sometimes people get too afraid to play around with the elements, and I don't mean in a disrespectful way, because this shows you can do it in a respectful way.
Yeah.
Where you're true to the idea of the text and yet leave something inspiring that might pull people into it.
Well, it did, you know, the primary effect it had on me was, as I described, I'm really interested now in exploring that Mary and Joseph a little bit further. I don't know where else I can get material, you know. I mean, the Gospels is what we have, right? But just to think more about them as people, and that again, that was kind of a profound moment for me. I always know they were people, obviously, right? But you just don't think of them as real people.
Because we're looking in hindsight. We're not looking at them who are faced with all of these momentous things where they have to literally step out in faith.
Right, right.
She's pregnant. That's, you can't hide that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to be mocked for it. Or they're going to go, well, Joseph, way to go early, huh? Yet that early, right?
Yeah, and it was real danger. They had to get the heck out of there and get to Egypt.
You could actually get stoned for getting pregnant like that.
Right, right.
If he doesn't acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a real thing. And yeah, soldiers did kill all those little babies. How did those families feel about that? We hear about that, and that's the fourth day of Christmas, I think, is the celebration, but you know, the memorial of the innocents.
Mm-hmm.
They were the first martyrs for Christ without knowing it. They and their families is what the church says.
Right.
And you stop and think about that. People just sweeping in, grabbing your kid and killing it.
Yeah, that's horrible.
And so the way he showed that made me live it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the desperation of the parents, the little 12-year-old boy who grabbed his brother because he knows he can run faster than his mother, trying to get away from the soldiers.
Yeah.
That stuff.
Yeah, and that one woman who had got away and she fell. Oh, that was tough to read, too.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yep.
And the baby, and then he goes and kills her.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Horrible. Horrible. But there it is. Yeah. You know.
Well, yeah. And you're faced with all those kinds of, in the telling of this adventure story, which is based on the true story, you have, you know, all those situations where Balthazar's like, you're killing babies, as he's going to kill this soldier. And he's like, well, they were my orders. And he's like, that's the worst reason ever. You know? And so then we're taken back to Nazi Europe.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, this is a repeatable problem and thing that we're all faced with.
Mm-hmm.
There is a book, when you're talking about that, that I'll send you a link to that I reviewed called Go to Joseph.
Okay.
I think is what it's called. Mm-hmm. It's a very little book, and it's a wonderful little meditation, maybe, on all the things that they know about Joseph from the scripture and kind of expanding on that, like, how would he and Mary have gone to Bethlehem? They would have been going close by where Sarah and, what's her husband's name? Anyway, John the Baptist's parents, you know, cousin. And they would they have stopped off for a night? Would they have just gone? Would they, you know, all these various things that kind of put you more into what they were living too.
Yeah.
My husband and I read it during lunches at work, since we work together.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds
good.
And
he really liked it. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
So there are little books like that that kind of help you enter into it.
That's great. Yeah. I'll check that out for sure. You know, I can't, are there anything else that you can think of as far as, you know, like Mary's concerned and stuff?
I mean,
it's a tough one, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of a light book, you know, it's a fun read, and it's good for Christmas, but it's not insignificant. I mean, it does make you think while you're having the adventure.
Right.
Put you in the place, so.
Good choice.
Well,
lots
good.
Of fun.
I'm
I remember, I mean, the previous Christmas one you picked was Hogfather. Another great choice. My goodness. Yeah. So.
Well, you know, I'm always going to go for the light one.
Perfect for the holidays. Love them. Yeah. Loved them both.
Good. I'm so glad.
You bet. Lots of fun. Lots of fun.
What did you pick for Christmas, though?
What did we? I don't remember.
I don't know, because I remember that you wanted to read Dickens, but you're like, oh, Christmas Carol. And I was like, do it. Do it. Didn't.
And I didn't do it. Yeah, because I read that almost every year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't recall what we did for Christmas, but yeah. But yeah, I sure have enjoyed these two.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yep, heck of a lot. So, yeah, I guess, well, this is our last podcast for about a month.
Yes, that's right.
That's right, yeah. I'm off to Miami, Florida, and I'll be down there. Yeah, I'm going to warm up a little bit. So I'll be down there for most of December. I'll be home for Christmas, though.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that kind of changed. I'll talk to you later.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to spend Christmas in Florida, but that's okay.
Yep.
We don't need to know your schedule. Stop.
Right. We're coming back and in the snow. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's good.
That'll be good.
It'll be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, so then in January, we're going to talk about Muscle Shoals, right?
Yes. That documentary that is available streaming.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Maybe showing near you.
That's great. Yep. I'm going to keep my eyes open for that. And then in February is Lord of the Rings month. Yes. I'm going to call that Lord of the Rings month because surely that's going to be more than one podcast.
Oh, my gosh. Seems like it would have to be. And that's, I guess that's your pick. Although I guess it's mutual.
Yeah,
but
it's kind of a mutual pick. But yeah, I'd take it.
You're the one who kept really saying, should we read the Lord of
let's
the Rings?
Read it, let's read it.
And I kept
like,
no, no. That, yeah. I mean, well, we could. Yeah, we could. And I was partway through
well, you've been reading it, you've been reading it so slowly, and I just really feel like reading it.
Well, yeah, and I have to say that's when I went back and went, okay, and started putting page markers on stuff, and you should see it. It's like a book almost won't close. There's so many markers everywhere.
Oh, that's fun. That's great.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to that.
And that's we'll hilarious. Have a guest for that one. So Seth from SFF Audio.
That's right. Yep, that'll be great.
Who says it's his favorite book, which I never understood having
how
a favorite
can Lord
book.
Of the Rings be someone's favorite book? I just don't
but
understand.
Now, yeah, well, you're cheating because I told you this. But after rereading it, I'm like, oh my gosh, I think this might be my favorite book. Oh, I did it. I didn't. Oh. It wasn't a goal, but it happened.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I started reading it aloud to my daughter. So I'm a little bit into it already. And
oh.
Yeah, just a little bit.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah, and now she's taken off on her own, you know, cuz okay. she's home, you know, most of the time right now just recovering, but the
yeah.
But yeah, I'm into it. I'm through his 11-1st birthday.
Well, that's the beginning.
Almost on the way to Bree.
I know. That's and we can't talk about it more except to say mm-hmm. it's so artfully done. It really pulls you into it from a simple beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Tolkien, you genius. And C.S. Lewis and everybody who helped him with
that's
it.
That's great. Heck so, yeah. Well, wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. And then so in March, you should be done with your project. Is that it?
No, or I mean, the project will still be going on, but I don't expect any long trips to Florida. Okay. So Florida is just the site that we're building. So my major part should be done around then, but there will be a week now and then that I'll go. So okay. we'll have some things to work around, but it shouldn't affect us too badly.
All right. So we'll kind of be yeah. back on a regular schedule starting sometime in March.
I would say so. Yeah.
Okay.
And February, I think, will seem like a regular schedule because, like I said, Lord of the Rings is going to take more than one podcast to talk about. I think we're gonna put a feast out with some mead.
Perhaps some long songs and poetry.
Right, they come in pints.
Yeah,
yeah. So then we'll record as long as it takes and then split that up into you know a few shows or whatever it works out. But I think yeah. February you're gonna have more than one show or one episode.
It.
Yeah.
Yes.
No question. And it seems like we ought to take a half an hour and even just discuss the movies in context, too. Because
I was thinking I was going to need to rewatch the movies. For one thing, I have to say, I was literally shocked mm-hmm. when I said something about Amor to my husband.
Uh-huh.
And he just gives me this blank look. And I went, oh, you remember. That wasn't that Carl Urban, and he did this, and my husband's like, okay. And I went, how could you not know that? And he's like, I don't know these things. And I said, you saw the movies? And he goes, once. And I went, twice. You watched them at the movies, and you watched them at home. And he goes, yes, but that was a long time ago. So you may have to reacquaint all of us with the movies.
Yeah.
Except that I'm not sure I can watch them anymore without throwing things at the TV sometimes.
That's
oh,
right,
Faramir, because what have you wrought, Peter Jackson?
Why anyway. Did you do that? You bet. But it'll be fun to talk about that after we talk about the books. I think it'd be kind of fun to talk about that those movies and what the choices that Peter Jackson made would be really interesting to discuss.
Yeah, yeah, they will.
Well, fantastic. Are you going to go see The Hobbit?
No.
Or are you done with The Hobbit?
No, I didn't see the first one. And
oh, okay.
I feel like I was justified in that, and so I really don't want
well,
to see
sure.
the second one.
I mean, Martin Freeman was so good.
Oh, I love him, but, yeah. you know.
He was really terrific.
Come on, I saw the trailers. Mm-hmm. I saw that Legolas is back because they put in the backstory with the love interest. And I'm like, look, I know he was a Mirkwood elf. I get that. But he wasn't there. Let it go.
Let it go.
I understand Orlando Bloom does a fantastic Legolas, and I will fight to the death anyone who says he doesn't. However, he doesn't belong in this movie.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Exciting. All right. So we have all that to look forward to. So fun.
Yes.
So
yes,
everybody
yes.
have a wonderful holiday.
Yes, have a great Thanksgiving and yeah. a great Christmas and a great New Year's. Oh my gosh, we're going to be gone for a long time.
Not too
long. This will be
terrible. Yeah, it's not going to be fun.
No.
But thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Yep.
And we'll talk to you again. Not so long from now.
Not so long from now.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.